Campus FM presents a talk organized by the Malta Historical Society entitled The Knights as Promoters of the Cult of St. Paul. This talk is delivered by Monsignor John Azzopardi.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Today is the last lecture in this series, The Maltese Legacy of the Order of St. John, and it couldn't end in a better explanation than our dear Monsignor John Azzopardi, who offered to do the closing lecture for this series, of this year's series. We are still trying to organize for next year's series. I can tell you that the president of Malta himself offered me, or rather asked me, to organize a series of lectures. We are not sure if we are going to combine the nights together with the president. But in any case, the program is ready, and I presume that it will be as successful as this year. Well, it couldn't be a better closure than today is the patron saint of Malta, who 2,000 years ago, now let's not start again into polemics, gave us this great gift of the faith that we still, let's hope, it remains on our Lord Jesus Christ. So, Father John Azzopardi will tell us about the promotion of the Knights. St. Paul already existed, the devotion in Malta, as you know. But then the Knights, of course, continued to explode. Okay?
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for coming. So, the Knights of St. John on Malta. We are not talking of the period they were in Rhodes or before coming to Malta, but when and after coming to Malta, 1530, as promoters of the cult of St. Paul. Before the arrival of the order on our islands in 1530, Pauline cult was stronger in Malta than it was in Rome or in Sicily. And this can be proved statistically. But its fame and its monuments, the Pauline monuments of Malta, were hardly known outside Malta. Among the Maltese, Pauline cult was mainly centered, practically exclusively centered, in two areas. The Medina Rabat area and the St. Paul's Bay area. Medina Rabat area. Here we have two maps, pre-1530, before the coming of the Knights. And both show La Città and Lorabato, with the grotto up there. They also show Santa Maria della Grotta, which is the Dominicans. But they both show pre-1530, Medina, the walled city, with Lorabato, and then a depiction of the grotto of St. Paul. And even here, there is La Città, which you see there, and La Città, and up there La Grotta di San Paolo. Already with the tradition of the stone, the extraordinary powers of the stone of the grotto, which not the priests, also the priests, but not mainly the priests, the doctors and the expanded and exploited as much as possible, and the knights more and more. Now, besides the Medina Rabat area, there was also the St. Paul Bay area. That is a map, a portion of Piri Reis, 1519 Turkish, showing in St. Paul's Bay, Al Santo Bay, the Bay of St. Paul. So already before 1513, 1519, and even for the Turks, that was already the place dedicated to St. Paul. There were also some other churches in Malta, for example, the parish of Safi. No, it was not a parish, but the church of Safi was already dedicated to St. Paul in 1436. And there were many altars in our churches and chapels and also niches. Now, before the Knights came to Malta, and Gozo, of course, were subject to frequent incursions by the Turks. Those are the two old churches in St. Paul's Bay, St. Paul Mil'i and St. Paul Tahjeyec. their architecture as it is does not predate the order. That architecture is as reconstructed by Grandmaster Ahmed Dawinyakul. But the churches were there much more, I mean, centuries before, even from the 1400s. Yes. Now, Malta and Gozo were subject to frequent incursions by the Turks. And, of course, the Maltese tried to defend. But they also invoked St. Paul Misirna against the Turks. And even when the walls of Medina were in a very bad state, the bishops of Malta, for example, Bishop Antonius, we are referring to 1461, obtained from the Pope, from Pope Pius II, a plenary indulgence. At the time, to obtain a plenary indulgence, you had to get the permission of the Pope, for all those who would contribute to the repair of the bastions, together with a visit to St. Paul's Grotto. And later on, the help of St. Paul on a white horse, whenever saints appear, even not only St. Paul, San Giacomo de Compostela especially, that is Mattia Preti in the cathedral, imitating or copying or being inspired by a similar painting of San Giacomo, St. James in Compostela, always on a white horse. Even in Sicily, when the Madonna appears on a horse, on a white horse, to help the people, to encourage the people. Now, and look at the Turks down there. And St. Paul, with the stars of Europe already, and with a horse brandishing a sword up there. And there are even other paintings. There is one in Rabat which is older than this. But, I mean, that was also the protection of our patron saints. And also with St. Paul, there was the protection of St. Agatha. In 1551, when there was a big invasion, the people had recourse to St. Agatha. Now, whether it was a real apparition that St. Paul really came down, or whether it was a big banner or something like that to encourage the people, or I don't know what. But, anyhow, it always gave a big encouragement to the people. So those were our patron saints. And during Turkish invasions, the island was at a loss. Before the knights came to Malta, not even the bishops of Malta lived in Malta. All the bishops of Malta lived outside Malta, except occasionally they would come for a visit or for some practical occasion, or to get the tithes due to them, or something like that, but there were sporadic visits to Malta by the bishops of Malta. But after the knights came to Malta, the bishops always resided in Malta, because now there was more security, and also there was some stability. Now, so the order came to Malta, yes. Resident bishops, that is Lil Adam entering Medina. The people of Medina were not very happy with the knights. They always wanted to keep the knights away. So the Grand Master would enter Medina there under a canopy there, and would have, before they give him the keys of Medina, he would have to swear that he will always protect the rights and the privileges of the Maltese, which, of course, vocally they always did. And then, in practice, they tried to do away with. However, that is the beginning of the Knights of Malta. And the first bishop of Malta, the first resident bishop of Malta, who had been here already some time before the Knights came, when there was the rumor that the Knights came, was Bishop Tommaso Bozio. He was the first bishop. That is a marble plaque with his coat of arms, because he was buried. He was the first bishop residing in Malta, and he was buried in the Cathedral of Medina, in the main altar. Then later, when the new cathedral was built, they removed his bones and put them in the crypt. But that beautiful coat of that beautiful marble slab is still preserved in the sacristy. Yes. The knights were aware of the Pauline cult in Malta. They could not have been otherwise. They were really aware of it. And St. Paul First of all, they were religious people. Secondly, we are in the culture of the Counter-Reformation, when to have anything connected with an apostle was, I mean, a great honor. In fact, we are all here on Maltese. We have no people here from Venice. Well, you know what the Venetians did. To have something apostolic, they stole the bones, the relics of St. Andrew from Constantinople, and took them to Venice to say that in Venice they have the relics of the apostles. And Pope John Paul II, to their great disappointment, ordered them to return to the Phoenicians, at least half of them. But when they came to Malta, the knights were in a position to exploit the cult of St. Paul for devotional purposes and also for a hidden political agenda, which they did admirably. But it all was in the best interest of the Maltese. The mission of St. Paul, they considered his mission as similar to that of the knights. Look, that is what the knights did on the secondary entrance to Medina. Paul with the cross and with the sword, just as they said to the crusaders. You either believe in Christianity, you either be converted to the Christianity, or else we'll use the sword. We'll fight with the sword. Now, St. Paul used the sword, not against the Christians, against the Jews. No, against the Christians. Because he was still before his conversion. But the guys used it, against the infidels. Okay. So then the knights produced the first printed description of Malta, which is Quintinus. That is Quintinus, the first printed description of Malta. It's published in 1536, but it was written before, 1533. And in it, Quintinus, who was a chaplain, a very prominent chaplain of the order, he was the auditore of the Grand Master, but he there stressed, when describing Malta, to a great extent, the cult of St. Paul in Malta. Personally, he did not believe that St. Paul came to Malta, personally, because when you read between the lines, but he was still in favor of the other theory, the older theory of Meleda. But he stresses so much that the Maltese are convinced of the presence of St. Paul and believe in St. Paul, and have faith and trust in St. Paul. And he speaks of the churches of St. Paul's Bay and of St. Paul's Grotto and so on. He really gives testimony to a very, very strong Pauline tradition of the Maltese people. So even, this is very interesting. I don't have the text here, I didn't bring it with me. In 1566, after the great victory, after the great siege brought Malta in the limelight of Europe. You all know how many maps were published about during the siege and so on, and the siege made Malta and the Knights of St. John really renowned. When in 1566, La Valette prepared for the laying of the first stone of Valletta, and this was here exactly where we are today in this church, he asked Padre Spirito Pelo Angusciola, who was an Augustinian, to deliver the oration. And in his oration, which has been recently published, it's published already in Bozio. No, it's already published in Abela, but it has been recently published with details by Joseph Mitchantar. And in this history, that this is the island that has been blessed by St. Paul, that St. Paul is very living here, that the victory is due, that all victories are due to the protection of St. Paul, and that St. Paul has left his imprints even into the Maltese rock. And that is the earliest printed reference to Pauline folklore. Now, I group them together there. People at the time, their knowledge of fossils was very limited. The people want to find an explanation. What's that? Traces of the vestiges, of the vestigia, the imprints of St. Paul. So, fossil shark's teeth. We still call it, it's very popular today, Il Sin San Paolo. here, up there, the breast of St. Paul. Here, the feet of St. Paul. Here, the eyes of St. Paul. Here, and also here, Baculum Sancti Pauli, the stick of St. Paul. And this has been delivered in a big oration in front of La Valette and the Order at that time. I put them together there because there is a private collector in Rabat who is a great friend of mine, Michael Gatt, and he has a big collection of these. So I asked him to put them together there. And then that was 1566, March 56. The Knights built Valletta, and on 18th March 1571, the Knights moved into Valletta from the Borgo, and churches and oberges started to be built. So in 1573, Grandmaster Lacassière, because La Valette had died, laid the first stone of the Conventual Church of St. John, Ecclesia Conventualis Major, because the Knights had a conventual church in all countries, but the Church of St. John was Ecclesia Conventualis Major, the major conventual church of the whole order of St. John in the new city. And of course, the new city included, the new Church of St. John included the chapel of the Lang of France. Each Lang has its chapels, and the patron saint of the French knights was St. Paul. So one of the chapels was, and still is, the chapel of St. Paul. Incidentally, many of the grandmasters were French. Alof de Wignacourt was French himself, and so the French knights had a big devotion to St. Paul. However, they were not, the knights, of course, had the conventual church of St. Paul. But the diocese was not happy. Immediately, the Cathedral of Indina, the knights were selling the land of Valletta to the religious, or to everybody, to houses and so on, according to plans. Immediately, the cathedral chapter bought a portion of land in Valletta, which was in the area of the present Jesuit church, and at the expense of the cathedral, constructed a parish church now, dedicated to St. Paul, so St. John and St. Paul. Because if the Knights have as their patron St. John, the Maltese have as their patron St. Paul. And it was impossible to leave a new city without a church of the diocese. Don't forget that at St. John's, the bishop was just a guest. The Bishop of Malta could never celebrate a mass in St. John's, because that was the church of the order, of the religious order, without the permission of the head, the spiritual head of the order, who was the grand prior. Of course, he had a special chair, but just that. Whereas the church, the diocese, had its cathedral at Indina, but what in the new city of Valletta? Indina was losing its importance. So build a new church dedicated to St. Paul. It was in the, where there is the Jesuit church here, and the bishop there put also his throne, because his throne was in the cathedral, but the bishop there put also his throne as his church. It is documented that in Mount Chiberras, because here the church is built in Mount Chiberras, there was already, they already found a niche dedicated to St. Paul somewhere here. Then, in 1579, this is, 1573, the first stone of Lacassière. Immediately the cathedral constructed a parish church of St. Paul. Incidentally, to be honest, it was the Grand Master himself who asked the diocese, now, people are coming to live in Valletta. Will you leave them without pastoral care? Because the knights had only care of those of the members of the order. This was here, the parish church of the members of the order, but not of the people of Malta. So the Grand Master himself asks for a priest to take charge, and the cathedral sent a priest, and before the Church of St. Paul constructed, he used the Church of the Carmelites. But then, soon, immediately, 1579, Bishop Tommaso Gargallo commissioned the artist Matteo Perez de Alecchio to paint an altarpiece of this church, the Church of the Shipwreck. He commissioned Matteo Perez de Alecchio, who was the same painter which the Grand Master had bought, had brought to Malta to paint the altarpiece of the conventual church, which is, has now been replaced, and also to paint in the palace. So that is St. Paul. And this picture of the shipwreck has been a model and an inspiration for all, for many other paintings of the shipwreck. It's Paul in the middle, Luke assisting him. Luke is very important. Without Luke, we would not have known the story of the shipwreck, and the centurion. The centurion is just an officer. But for Malta, for the Malta episode, he is very important. Because you remember that when there was the shipwreck, the soldiers wanted to kill all the prisoners, including Paul, lest anybody should escape. But it was the centurion who saved the life of Paul. He said, no, I take the responsibility, don't kill them. Because he wanted to save the life of Paul. So in Malta, although he was just a Roman officer, but in Malta he's very important. And Bishop Gargallo is kneeling down here, kneeling down, humbling himself before St. Paul. Probably you know some stories about Bishop Gargallo. He was a very harsh man. I mean, that is humiliating himself because he had to suffer a great, you know. He was chastised by the Pope many times, so here he is kneeling before St. Paul. However, also for the Church of St. Paul in Valletta, the Grand Masters made substantial donations. Of course, the French langue, the first church was in the Jesuit church. But then Gargallo gave that church to the Jesuits, and they found another church, and they built in 1638, they prepared the first stone for the larger Paris church of Valletta. That is a photo of the facade of it, which was made later. It's very difficult to take a good photo, which we are done and told. It's very difficult to take a good photo of that facade because the street is narrow, but I mean, that is the beginning of the new church in Valletta. However, on the other and various grandmasters then embellished and made substantial donations, not only for St. John, but also for the construction and embellishment of the enlarged parish church of St. Paul in Valletta. These included Lascaris, Cotoner, Caraffa, Pinto, and Villena for constructions and enlargements. And then other grandmasters, Adrian Wignacourt, Pinto and Villena donated a lot of silver plate and jewelry. In fact, in the sacristies at Valletta, there are two portraits of two grandmasters. May you see them? On the other hand, while at the same time, the grandmasters and the church and the diocese were embellishing the Church of St. Paul, the knights were embellishing the church, the Chapel of France. And the Chapel of France has that wonderful picture, beautiful picture, which has been repeated many times by Mattia Preti, of which there exist several copies of the conversion of St. Paul, Mattia Preti. But then they also included the shipwreck. I think it's in the next one. Yes, that is a beautiful minette of the shipwreck of St. Paul. It's attributed to Lucas Killian, but probably Lucas Killian was only an engraver. There must have been an engraving of him. That is the shipwreck of St. Paul as Elgonet in the church, in the chapel of France at St. John's. But the knights also, as I said, helped the Church of St. Paul. Those are two portraits, Favre, Grandmaster de Rohan, and Grandmaster Manuel de Villena. They are in the sacristies of St. Paul's Church in Valletta. The culture of the Counter-Reformation emphasized very much the cult of the patron saint. The knights did not hesitate to consider St. Paul as joint patron of Malta. This is evidenced by the paintings of the French knight Antoine Favre. So those are two paintings by Favre. One, look, they are rather similar. St. John the Baptist and St. Paul. It's not Maltese painters, but a painter of the order, as joint patrons of Malta. And even here, that is in the Wignacourt Museum. It comes from a private collection. This one is in the, now it's in the Curia, which was in the Casa Manresa, St. John and St. Paul together. That is a French knight, Favre, considering the two saints as joint patrons of Malta, of Hospitaller Malta. Next, however, yes, Ara. That is a document of the Castellania. It is sometime 1760, I think. Look at that formula with that map of Malta, with that small map of Malta. But putting together up there St. John the Baptist and St. Paul as patrons of Malta. That is a clean bill of health, that the person entering Malta was free from infirmity. But I mean, that shows that the knights, it served the interest of the knights to consider both saints as joint patrons of Hospitaller Malta. Now, the fame of Malta after the victory of 1565 attracted numerous nobles, travelers of the Grand Tour, and daughters to visit Malta. The knights, on their part, spared no effort to promote Malta as the place where Paul suffered shipwreck and converted the people to Christianity, and hence Malta as the island of St. Paul. You know the old polemic. Vogue in Acts says that St. Paul was shipwrecked on an island, Melita. In Greek, Melita in Latin. Now that is accepted by everybody. But which island was that Melita? There are three or four places in antiquity, islands, that were called Melita, as there are also two or three islands by the name of Gozo, I mean all equivalents. However, in 1200, it was for the first time the Byzantine Emperor Constantinus Porphyrogenitus, already in 1100, stressed that the Melita, where St. Paul suffered shipwreck, was not Melita in the middle of the Mediterranean, but Meleda in the Adriatic. One of the reasons, of the motivations for this, was political. Malta was under the Arabs. The Byzantines could not digest that the island which St. Paul converted and where St. Paul was shipwrecked and preached and stayed for 3 months was an Arabic island. So they found another interpretation. And before the knights came to Malta, the few, not very numerous, travelogues and visitors and so on who wrote, not a great number, the greater emphasis was not on Malta, but on Meleda. That was before the period of the knights in Malta. When the knights came to Malta, and when after the great siege, numerous travelogues were published and descriptions, the emphasis changed completely through the propaganda of the knights. They all stressed, I mean 95% stressed, showing the monuments of St. Paul, St. Paul's Grotto, St. Paul's Bay, that the island possessed by the knights, the famous island of the victory over the Turks, was the same Melita where St. Paul was shipwrecked. And the emphasis the knights made and the promotion they made of Malta as the island of the shipwreck was marvelous, was wonderful. And it then was developed in various forms of literature and cult, as we shall see. Those are four travelogues. Niederstedt, this is a rare book, a very beautiful book, even that is a very rare book. I mean, these are all descriptions of Malta, voyages to Malta, travelogues, stressing enormously Malta as a Pauline island. Yes? Identification controversy, Malta and Meleda, I wish I could show you. Look, now, Paul came from there, let's see, Jerusalem, Cyprus, Kier, and then, here you have Sicily and Malta. Meleda is up there. So, I mean, the geographic argument is evident. If St. Paul really, really was shipwrecked there, from there, how did he go to Sicily and then Reggio and then Rome? I mean, it was obvious to make all that way down. This is, in fact, and Walter Bryant, who is in favor of the other theory. But this map shows you the two sites. However, I said that the knights, of course, promoted the French knights promoted the Chapel of France and St. John's. The Grand Masters, however, promoted many other polling places in Malta. It was in their interest to promote polling places. We mentioned St. Paul's in Valletta, but even they made donations to other places. For example, Grand Master Beredin he visited St. Paul's Cathedral in the 16th century, which means in the 17th century. But when he visited the cathedral, he presented to St. Paul his own 16th century sword with scabbard. Now, for a Grand Master to present to the church, to St. Paul, his own sword, a very old sword, that is really meaningful. And before him, the same thing had been done by Fra Don Martino Navarre, Grand Prior of Navarre. So this is a photo of the two swords in silver swords with scabbards, which were presented to the Cathedral of St. Paul. This is by the Prior of Navarre, and this is by a Grand Master. Actually, these were nobody could realize they were in silver because they were dark, I mean, with old age and so on, and without being properly taken care of. They were under the main altar, and then we transported them to the Cathedral Museum. But members of the order and knights made other donations to St. Paul. In 1725, yes, Grand Master Villena erected a niche with his coat of arms and with a statue of St. Paul at Ain Razul, where there is the Pauline tradition. That is still there. It's a donation in honor of St. Paul and in memory of the tradition of Ain Razul in St. Paul's Bay. Yes. In 1753, I don't have a photo of this, Bailiff Fra Ferdinand de Correa, a prominent member of the order, donated a fine marble statue of St. Paul to the Meliha Sanctuary. I don't have a photo here, but if you go to the Meliha Sanctuary, you'll see a fine statue in marble of St. Paul donated by Bailiff Fra Ferdinand de Correa. Bailiff Remshi, most probably Remshing, also gave to St. Paul's Grotto these two pictures. They are half round. They are not straight, they are half round. In honor of St. Paul, which is the ecstasy, the vision of St. Paul and his martyrdom. Then, we now come, next, to an earlier grandmaster who was really, who wanted really to promote not only Pauline cult, but also St. Paul's Grotto. As for St. Paul's Grotto, Grandmaster Cardinal Fra Rubens de Ruben Verdal was particularly attached to St. Paul's Grotto. Michael Heberer, 1588, that is the book, Egyptiaca Servitus, written by Heberer. He says that Verdala, probably he was also a very superstitious grandmaster, used to wear a ring with a stone of St. Paul's Grotto, mounted in such a way as to touch his finger for protection against what he calls grimmen, probably anger. Then, this is all stated in that book. And the Kaberer, who had visited the grotto twice, reports, gives an engraving of that picture of St. Paul at the grotto. Vere eclocus sanctus est. This is the holy place of St. Paul with the sword. It's no longer extant, but it was in St. Paul's Grotto, according to Haberer. Now, when in September 1584, Gian Andrea Doria, Generalissimo delle Armi Spanuole nel Mare, visited Malta with a part of the Spanish fleet, Verdala ordered that the illustrious visitor, Gian Andrea Doria, be accompanied on his way from Valletta to St. Paul's Grotto by all the cavalry of the island. So when Gian Andrea Doria, a very important visitor, was in Malta, Grandmaster Verdala says, let's take him to St. Paul's Grotto, accompanied by all the cavalry of the island. And then, in 1580, Verdala commissioned a memento in the form of a closed book made of terra sigillata from the grotto, having on the obverse his image, the image of the Grandmaster there, with an inscription beneath the Nela Korowit. So this stone is powerful against poison. And on the other hand, his coat of arms, Ostium Terror. I mean the terror of his enemies. This refers to Verdala, not to the school of St. Paul. Probably he should have done Ostium Terror beneath his portrait. That is all made. It is one of the earliest forms of terra sigillata made from the stone of St. Paul's Grotto. This is by Grandmaster Verdala in 1589. Now 1589 is very early, before the knights took over St. Paul's Grotto. Now, as already stated, the culture of the Counter-Reformation emphasized the cult of the patron saints. In 1610, Bishop Gargallo declared Publius, the protos of the acts, now venerated by the Maltese as first bishop of Malta, as an added patron saint. So there is a declaration by Bishop Gargallo in 1610 that Publius is to be considered a secondary patron saint of Malta. Saint Paul, there is no declaration for Saint Paul and for Saint Agatha as Malta's patron saints. They have been there by tradition, by the will of the people, by from immemorable times. But for Saint Publius, it was in 1610 that Publius, the chief man of the island, was being considered and interpreted as the first, as the person left by St. Paul to take care of the Church of Malta, the beginning of the Church of Malta, and hence as its first bishop. So he was declared as a patron saint of Malta. And the knights really exploited this, because when after the earthquake of 1693, Grandmaster Villena constructed a new entrance to Imdina, he placed the three patron saints of Malta, Paul in the middle with the viper and the fire, Agatha with the symbols here, and Publius with the lion, because then there was the other tradition, which is not historically correct, that he later became a bishop of Athens and was martyred there by the lions. There was a bishop, there was a Publius, bishop of Athens, who was martyred by the lions, but it's not the same Publius of Malta. Yeah? There is a 300-year difference. But at that time, chronology was not very exact. So those are the, and here, there you, and here you have self, imperialism and the launch thing. But besides the cult protection and imitation of the patron saints, the Counter-Reformation movement endeavored to acquire and promote sacred places, relics and objects connected with these patrons. So they did not only want the cult of St. Paul, but something physically, materially connected with St. Paul. The order as such had no places, relics or objects connected with St. Paul. They had the chapel of St. Paul in St. John's. So the most sacred of such places was, of course, St. Paul's Grotto in Rabat, where, according to an immemorable tradition, I emphasize the word tradition because it's not in the Bible, but it is an immemorable tradition, St. Paul had founded the earliest Christian community in pagan Malta. But how one would be able, how would the order ever succeed in depriving the local church and, I mean, steal, I'm using a very harsh word, steal, but acquire, not under the jurisdiction of the diocese and of the bishop, but under the jurisdiction of the order, the cradle of Christianity in Malta, St. Paul's Grotto. How would they ever succeed? But things went out very well. The challenge, this challenge was, so I mean, that is the underground entrance, the staircase leading to St. Paul's Grotto, which is beneath, so stairways leading to underground cave of St. Paul. How would the knights ever be able to deprive the Diocese of Malta, the Church of Malta, the local church from that sacred place, the cradle of Christianity, and take it under their jurisdiction? This challenge was admirably and diplomatically tackled in the early 17th century by the pious and diplomatic French Grandmaster Olof de Wynjacour. Olof de Wynjacour has made an important contribution. He deserves that is the Grand Master, 1601, 1622. I mean, his contribution is enormous for Malta. Actually, 1600, 1601 is the best time. I mean, the knights now had come to stay after the Great Siege. There was the beginning of prosperity. So with prosperity, you can also try to include and to emphasize culture. When you are dying of hunger, you don't think of culture. But when there is stability and security, then you can also think of the local traditions and culture. Through his subtle efforts, and he was very diplomatic, yeah? And through circumstances which chance or divine providence worked out in his favor, and which he marvelously exploited, Winnicott was to succeed in acquiring for the grotto no other place than this sacred grotto, sanctified for 3 months by St. Paul's presence, by St. Paul's prayer, by St. Paul's activity, the cradle of Christianity in Malta. Besides, he was also to acquire for the order a much desired base or footing in the rather hostile old city area. I told you that Imdina, the nobility of Imdina, and I mean the old traditions and the high clergy and so on, never wanted the order. The Grand Master had to swear who would obtain the privileges, but they were. So the order had no footing in the Imdina Rabat area. And with St. Paul's Grotto, next to Imdina, they were to acquire a very strong base, a very strong footing in that area, which was also hostile, rather hostile to the order, not to the people of Rabat, but to the order, to the diocese. So in late 1599, it happened, this is a very intriguing and mysterious character. It happened that in 1599, a Spanish gentleman, Juan Benegas de Cordoba, settled in Malta for some 24 years. Having visited St. Paul's Grotto, he decided to dedicate his activity in Malta, promoting this holy place as a center of prayer and of pilgrimage, both locally and internationally. He had been coming from Spain, where there was a big cult also of St. Paul, where there was also this cult of the patron saint and so on. And he said, well, this sanctuary is neglected. Nobody very much knows about this sanctuary, about the Maltese. I will dedicate all my activity to promote the grotto, both among the people of Malta and internationally. He was a holy man, a pious man, but also a great strategist. Yeah? He was a convert. His family, the Benegas family from Cordova, were converts of the Moriscos. So he could never become a knight, actually, because he had been descended from the Muslims. He had no qualifications to become a proper knight. But he said, I'll dedicate my activity to promote this holy place, both locally and internationally. He also realized that this underground cave adjoined to the upper, bigger church of the St. Paul, which by now had become the parish church of Imdina Rabat, was somewhat neglected. In fact, it was neglected because it was outside the walls. The cathedral chapter and the nobility would never spend their money, you know, in promoting a place which was very vulnerable outside the walls. You may recall that in 1551, when the Turks were coming to Malta, the local government, the universitas, ordered the Augustinians to demolish completely the church and the convent of St. Augustine in Rabat, because they said, now the Turks are coming on a big attack, they will find your church here, isolated here, they will attack you, they will use this as a basis and attack Imdina. So please destroy your convent. Destroy completely. And then the Augustinians went somewhere else. So, I mean, nobody would also blame the diocese or the Monsignore or the bishop and not investing money for St. Paul's Grotto, which was very vulnerable. But the knights could offer protection and could offer means. They also had, I mean, the means, the money. So, his piety, Benegas' piety and zeal, immediately attracted the attention of the people. But besides, Benegas happened to be a wise strategist, and he soon obtained The protection of the authorities. First of all, the protection of all of the Winya court. What better patron he could find? He says, I want to embellish and to promote this place. Will you help me? He said, of course I'll help you. The university of Malta, the local government, even the bishop and the cathedral, when they saw that he was offering, and had the ability to propagate that place, they said, of course, yes, as well as some private citizens who helped with donation and initiatives in favor of St. Paul's Grotto. With this help, he embellished the grotto with frescoes by Francesco Donneo. Look, that fresco there. That was painted by Francesco Donneo when he was also painting the Medina Cathedral. But as Benegas lived in Rabat, in the area of Rabat, he, and of course Medina was very near, he spoke to him and said, will you help me decorate St. Paul's Grotto? And those are some frescoes by Donneo. And with a construction for his residence near the grotto. He also built a small house near the grotto. Now, what more than that? Between 1606 and 1608, Benegas visited various sanctuaries and personalities outside Malta, including Rome. And when he was in Rome to try to promote St. Paul's Grotto, the Grand Master says, where are you staying in Rome? Please stay in the embassy of the order. That is your house when you are in Rome. And he was also received by the newly elected Paul V, Borghesia, who offered him whatever help he needed. So even the Pope, Paul V, Borghesia, remember that at the time Rome was divided between the French influence and the Spanish influence. And Borghesia came from the Spanish group. His father was the lawyer of the Vatican for Spain. So when he found the Spaniard and saw his enthusiasm, he says, whatever you need, I will offer you my help. So by three separate papal briefs, Benegas obtained from the Pope, first of all, the perpetual lease of a plot of land from the territory of Arbarca. The land near St. Paul's Grotto belonged to the cathedral prebend of Arbarca. And from Rome he obtained that a big portion of land, a very big portion, be leased against payment, against annual payment to Benegas for promotion of St. Paul's Grotto. Then the dismemberment of St. Paul's Grotto from the upper parish church, he told the Pope, but as long as the parish church up, depending on the cathedral, I never have a free choice. I never have a free hand. So, okay, we will separate St. Paul's Grotto from the parish church up there, from the upper side, and it will be under your custody. And the authority to dispose in future of the grotto in the best interest of the sacred place, even to the order. He said, I am not a Maltese. I will never, perhaps, not die here. When I have done my work and return back, who will take care of the grotto? And the Pope told him, decide yourself what is in the best interest of the grotto. If you like, you may even give it to the order. And of course, there was much diplomatic activity behind the scenes. And that was in 1610. These concessions were certainly not pleasing to the diocese, but most welcome to Grand Master William Hoare. Benegas also, so they are the three patrons here together. Paul V, Benegas, all of the Winya court. And their period coincides. They reigned, they were active in the first two decades of the 17th century, 1600 to 1620, more or less. Benegas also acquired from the Pope himself and other Spanish personalities residing in Rome various important relics, sacred vestments, and indulgences. Look, those are all papal gifts to Benegas from the grotto. Those all belonged to Pope Paul V. Look, his pectoral cross, pectoral cross, obverse and reverse, full of relics. The cross on his desk. His chasuble, who was a huge man, you can see it, I mean, there. The accessories of the chasuble, his alb, with some fine lace, according to the Spanish, usage, his chingulum, his girdle, look, with the symbols of the Passion, and he acquired also many relics from Naples. He commissioned two wooden statues of St. Paul and St. Luke and a number of statuettes for the relics. Look, with the relics he had, he went to Naples and worked out all these statues. Each statue has a relic there. Back in Malta, he organized a great a big pilgrimage with these gifts from Valletta to St. Paul's Grotto. The Grand Master and the Order, the Bishop and the Chapter, and thousands of faithful participated in the impressive pilgrimage. The time was now mature for Benegas to take the final decision to leave Malta. On 24th April 1617, Benegas visited Grand Master Wynyacourt and presented to him the papal brief of December 1610 and told him, "I decided to hand over the grotto with all its accretions to the order." On that very same day, the Grand Master obtained the approval of the council to accept this gift to the order and instructed his ambassador in Rome to go and personally thank the Pope for such a gift. Within 3 days, on 27th April, he sent the Grand Master sent his procurator, Fray Eugenio Maldonato, prior of Castile, to take formal possession of the grotto, not before compiling a detailed inventory of 83 items which Benegas had by then acquired for the grotto. That is another acquisition he made for the grotto. When the members of the order come every year for the pilgrimage there, they always see this beautiful statue. That is a Spanish statue which Benegas acquired for the grotto. Yes, then the inventory. Look, those are 83 items, which with donations, with things that Benegas had acquired for the grotto and ceded to the order. The promotion of the grotto was henceforth to be the major contribution of the order to advance the Pauline cult both locally and throughout Europe. Meanwhile, the new Bishop of Malta, Fra Baldassare Cagliares, fully supported by the Archpriest and the Cathedral Chapter, sent to Rome his procurator in an attempt to withdraw the passage of the order of the grotto to the order. Of course, that was understandable. There followed a long period of diplomatic correspondence and activity, both on the part of the diocese and on the part of the order. But Wynyacourt had to give up. Cagliares had to give up. Wynyacourt was now to work out a project that would be binding enough to resist any further attempt of suppression by the local church, which by now had lost completely its jurisdiction over the grotto. So he wanted to make sure that in future any attempt by the diocese to take back the grotto under its jurisdiction of the diocese would fail. In fact, there was such an attempt, unsuccessful attempt in 1637. Now, so Wynyacourt had this important task now. How can I prepare something that would be binding against any future attempt to disrupt it? And how can I make it financially strong, not to impose an additional burden on the order and to generate enough income whereby to further promote the grotto with new works of art and other initiatives? And so I had to devise a project, which I did. The project was to establish a generous foundation for the grotto foundation, which came to be known as the Wynyacourt Foundation. It would consist of the creation of a body of chaplains of the order, therefore not under the jurisdiction of the bishop, but under the jurisdiction of the Grand Master and of the Grand Prior, of number of chaplains of the order under the spiritual jurisdiction of the Grand Prior of the order and independent of the other chaplains, officiating the grotto and residing under strict discipline in the attached canonica. The foundation was to be financed by the acquisition for the grotto of much property, of a considerable property. The estate of Donna Maria Platamone and her son Salvatore, consisting of 17 large pieces of land in Gozo, including the whole of Tacenche. That is a very old plan of Tacenche. as it was at that time. This is 1705. That is the general, not as it is today, of course, but as it was at that time. And 17 pieces of land, which Wynyacord bought for 5,000 scudi, and which already then yielded an annual income of 330 scudi. The sum was to be paid from the personal purse of the Grand Master himself, not to burden the order. After being given permission by the council of the order to dispose of his property in favor of the Wynyacord Foundation. Wynyacord, however, was not satisfied with only acquiring the abode traditionally connected with St. Paul's three-month stay in Malta. He wanted more than that. It was not enough for him to possess the grotto. He wanted something else. His zeal for the Pauline traditions impelled him to include, as part of the foundation, the other place traditionally connected with St. Paul's shipwreck on the island, the church in St. Paul's Bay area known as Talhjeyec. Can you see? Ah, look. Now, that is the old church, Dr. Filgiliru, of Talhjeyec. Now, it was not there originally, it was where there was the tower. But the order, or it was done purposely, said, we have to construct a tower to protect the island, and the church is falling to pieces. I need to build a tower here. So I will remove the church from here and build it anew there. And here put the tower. And I will fund it myself. But it belonged to this diocese. And he said, now, if I'm going to take St. Paul's Grotto, I must also take the church. This church, Wynyacord had himself rebuilt between 1617, replacing an old decaying church, a benefice of the diocese, which was demolished to make place for a new and much needed watching tower guarding the coastline. The new church, financed by Wynyacord, was constructed on a raised podium. I think there is another picture. Embellished by an arcade round three sides and enriched by three large pictures by a Caravaggio artist who had just settled in Malta. This notwithstanding that the newly constructed church was under the jurisdiction of the diocese. He says, it belongs to the diocese, yes, but I will build it again. Wynyacord was prepared not to finalize the proposed foundation until the Holy See granted permission to include Talhjeyec Church as part of the Wynyacord Foundation. So he was always telling his ambassadors in Rome by correspondence, the Pope is prepared to give you St. Paul's Grotto. No, wait till he also gives us the other church of Talhjeyec. One may yet hear that about the same time, Wynyacord had also financed the rebuilding of the other medieval chapel of St. Paul Milli at Burmarrat, then in a poor state of conservation, in the traditional place of St. Paul's meeting with Publius. But it means that Wynyacord's Pauline zeal was completely satisfied with the grotto and Talhjeyec. He did not bother to get this church also, possibly because the other one was in the bay and one could have a dip in the sea, whereas here it's very difficult to have access. Okay. Things went out very well, because by a brief dated 17th February 1619, entitled Sacri Apostolatus Ministerio, Pope Paul V acceded to all the requests of Wynyacord, and in May 1621, Grand Master chose the first three professed chaplains under the rectorship of Fra Juan Benegas himself, whom had created Cavaliere Magistrale. The constitution of the foundation, once approved by the Pope, now needed papal approval not to be further suppressed. So the Pope told him, you may proceed. He made the foundation, the need of the foundation, but he said, no, I must get the approval of the Pope so that if the future any further authority, bishop or something, was to take it back, he has to get the permission of the Pope because the Pope had signed it. The golden age of the grotto under the administration of the order had now begun. St. Paul's Grotto and the small overstanding Church of St. Publius, which Benegas had constructed, soon became a center of prayer with numerous daily masses and with the daily recitation of the Divine Office mornings and afternoons. This was like the equivalent of a collegiate church of the order. Look, the Pauline complex, as it was there. the meticulous administration by the chaplains of the landed property in Gozo, donated to the Goro or Grotto by Grandmaster Winyakort, yielded enough income, yielded enough yearly income, and increased considerably over the years through the wise measures adopted by the chaplains. They were very good administrators. For example, instead of giving perpetual lease, which would never, I mean, augment, they gave temporary lease, and not for 100 years, for 33 years, so that after 33 years, they would raise the income. Ahem. The increasing income served to purchase some property, mostly caves near the grotto, to enlarge the church and build a sacristy, to enlarge the canonica, to increase the number of chaplains, including a teacher of moral theology, a maestro di canto and a master of novices, as well as some celebrated staff, and to commission paintings, sculptures, silver plate, marbles, embroidered vestments, etc. In 1636, just less than 30 years since their institution, the chaplains embarked on the construction of the present Collegio, you know the Collegio, on plans by Francesco Buonamici. So they immediately, as soon as they got some more money, they immediately brought over the most important architect in Malta at that time, the founder almost of the Baroque movement, Buonamici, to construct a huge palace for the chaplains. And that was the first Baroque building outside Valletta. So imagine, at Rabat, everything was very simple. But then, soon, near the grotto, there was this big palace, this Baroque palace in Mela. The plans soon attracted attention of an important patron of St. Paul's Parish Church, the noble Cosmano Navarra, to commission the same architect to construct an enlarged parish church, creating a unique harmonious complex. May you see? Look how harmonious is the complex. And here, there is the triumph of common sense. So both the patrons of the order and the patrons of the parish, and even for financial reasons, but for reasons of creating a harmonious complex, always made use of the same painters, the same architects, the same sculptors, and these artists would, of course, accommodate both clients, but create a harmonious structure. That was, so there was no rivalry, but there was a competition, but a very intelligent competition, which would make a very harmonious complex. The Collegio was completed in two phases. The Church of St. Publius was likewise enlarged twice. Works of art were commissioned to Fra Mattia Preti, Gian Nicola Bohagiar, Francesco Zara, besides minor works by the artist and chaplain of the order Fra Pietro Alardi. Sculptures were commissioned. Look, these are Maltese painters, Gian Nicola Bohagiar, who painted for the order. Sculptures were commissioned to Melchiorre Gaffa in Rome, Pietro Papaleo, Bartolomeo Menville, Alessandro Algardi. Architectural constructions were commissioned to Buonamici, Lorenzo Gaffa, and Salvatore Borch. Works of silver plate were abundant from the workshops of Aloisio Fenech, Troisi, Famucelli, and others. There were also important donations by Grandmaster Pinto, who in 1753 presented to the grotto that fine marble statue from the school of Gian Lorenzo Bernini. He also donated a silver monstrance and a set of embroidered vestments. Other donations came from directors and chaplains themselves. The Grand Master, we are finishing soon. The Grand Masters and the Knights on their part did not fail to accompany to the grotto or recommend their important visitors to see the grotto, as also did the many visitors of the Grand Tour and the travelers and daughters. Often, the visit was a part of a tour to Busquet. Among the VIPs, White might mention the Viceroy of Sicily, Cardinal Trivulzio, who, within the span of 1 month, visited the grotto, not once, but twice. Once to see the grotto, and another time to thank Paul for his recovery. An important visit was that of the Landgrave, later Cardinal Frederick of Hessen-Darmstadt, who was accompanied by Inquisitor Fabio Pigi, later Pope Alexander VII, who was Inquisitor in Malta, and the famous mathematician Athanasius Kircher. The visit occurred on 9 June 1617, soon after the Landgrave was converted to Catholicism. Presence of the Stone of the Grotto, together with Maltese fossils, often mounted in gold or silver, were given as presents to distinguished patrons of the order, to princes, even to papal legates. The earth given as a present was not in its crude form, but preparata, that is, powdered and worked out in the form of medallions or medals or book forms or statues. Handbills extolling the curative power of the stone, together with that of some fossils, were printed in various languages and distributed throughout Europe. So the knights made sure that they would print in various languages these handbills extolling the miraculous, the extraordinary power of the rock of St. Paul's Grotto. Medals from Terra Sigillata were very popular and now are scattered in various museums and collections throughout Europe. George Zammit Mempel has just published a huge book in which he collected many examples from all the museums, the medical museums and collections of Europe, with Terra Sigillata made from St. Paul's Grotto. The first recorded medal dates from 1621, when Wynyacourt and Benegas were still active. The occasion was the visit of the Saxon Duke Hans William Herzog of Saren, aged 11 years. So, and when he visited Malta, this important visitor, the Grand Master, Wynyacourt, something, prepared for him a special medal, commemorative medal, made of stone of St. Paul's Grotto. That is the earliest known medal. The medal had on the obverse the legend Santa Cecilia Ora Pro Nobis, the image of St. Paul with book, and the letters Grazia Beati Pauli. And the reverse, the legend, Hans Wilhelm Herzog zu Saren in Malta. The medal was in the collection of Frederick IV and formed part of the collection of the Pharmacy Museum in Basel. Unfortunately, the medal was auctioned by the curator of this museum in 1824, and we don't know the whereabouts, but this book describes it. This was followed a year later by a privilege conceded by the Grand Master to Buonarroti to work out medals from the grotto. These medals are now conserved at Casa Buonarroti in Florence. You remember that last year when there was the Pauline exhibition organized at Auberge de Castel, we brought them all from Florence. So look at those. Those are all medals of the saints of the order, and other medals prepared by Francesco Buonarroti, the nephew of Michelangelo, for his brother. Now, they include the saints of the order. Yes, next. Saints of the Counter-Reformation, all of them. Next. Images of Jesus Christ, crucifixion and nativity. That would be a nice Christmas card. Things of the cult of St. Paul, look at that one. St. Paul, that's the same medal. But one is with the sword, the other is without sword. Because when recently they cleaned them, something I think somebody used much, acid or something, and the sword of St. Paul had been removed. But incidentally, we had already obtained a photo before restoration. So that's why I put them there together. And some coat of arms. Look, coat of arms of Buonarroti, coat of arms, yes, and some other miscellaneous items. Look, that one is the Chimera, the symbol of Florence. These are all Pauline traces, yes. So this is a big collection. The tradition of the regenerative power of the earth of the grotto was also recorded in an elegant marble inscription on the stairs leading to the grotto. Ara, Hamarawa, Ara. Dikam lo għal kavalieri, when you enter the grotto. Melitensium patrem, gentium qui apostolum. So Saint Paul is the apostle of the Gentiles, but for the Maltese, he is not the apostle, but our father. Father of the Maltese, apostle of the Gentiles. And here he says that the dimensions of the grotto always remain the same, which is not true. But still they put it there. And the Gnosis did not believe it because they extend it further. So one can come out of it, say it's not the whole grotto, but only a part of it. Conclusion. The glorious period of the grotto endured till 1798. When the Knights left Malta in 1798, the chaplains, being Maltese, could not be thrown away. They remained residing in the Collegio and continued with their daily religious services, even though they temporarily removed from their vestments the insignia of the order. To appease the French, they soon removed the insignia, but continued just all the same. Their rector, Fra Savoy, who had formed part of the delegation which worked with Lord Nelson, former secretary of the Langue of France, succeeded also in saving all the silver plate of the grotto from the French despoliation. The French, took over all the silver plate of the order, except that of the grotto. It was he and the chaplains who welcomed Lord Horatio Nelson, Sir Alexander Ball and Lord Hamilton to the grotto and catacombs. But soon, the government took over the administration of all the property of the grotto, administering it rather badly, whereas before it yielded much income. As soon as it came under the civil administration, it dwindled. The chaplains under the Mies were substituted by diocesan clergy, which needed the approval of the civil authorities. The diocesan clergy, having their own residence, used the Collegio only as offices. But during World War II, the government occupied the Collegio, and the Collegio was used for refugees, for an oven, infirmary, victory kitchen, government school, social services, etc. Without a religious order officiating the grotto, there was no further scope for two churches with a common wall, both run by the diocesan priests performing the same services. Attempts, fully backed by the church authorities and the people of Rabat, to reunite the grotto with the parish church were in progress for many years, but were only finalized in the early 1960s, not with a local government, but during a colonial administration, with a historic deed of compromise, which gave back to the diocese, the churches and the Collegio, but took over all the property of the Winnicott Foundation against an annual but not revisable income. The complex now became a collegiate church according to canon law, and the Collegio has been turned into a museum with so many contents, archives, paintings, furniture, which belonged to the chaplains of the order. The liturgical vestments of the order and other privileges are still in use. There have been official visits by the last two deceased grandmasters, Moyana and Fra Barty. The Maltese Association still takes part in an annual pilgrimage to the grotto, Ftijima Toħra, a tradition started in 1960, when the order presented to St. Paul's Grotto a votive sanctuary lamp in the form of a galley of the order. We now look forward for the official visit of the present Grand Master Fra Matthew Festing, who accepted to open our new premises for the archives and library of the Winnicott Museum, which includes the rich collections of the former chaplains of the order. I have already prepared the marble inscription with the date, which now I have to replace. Okay? Thank you.
You have just listened to a talk organized by the Malta Historical Society entitled The Knights as Promoters of the Cult of St. Paul. This talk was delivered by Monsignor John Azzopardi.